Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. Welcome, everybody, to the Top Chef Judges Round Table on the Reality TV Wrap-Up Network. My name is Haley Strong. I am here today, as always, with just a great, wonderful group of people and myself. And they're here. Whoever, you know what? Josh, since you always want to talk first, why don't you just talk first?
Oh, this time I wanted to go last. Oh my God. I'm here. It's me. And Emily Fox is here because you heard her go, oh my God.
I know.
Just embarrassed by her husband. Oh, my husband.
Who else is here, Joshua?
I see Curtis Clark, the fluster cluck.
Hey there. Hey, everybody.
That's his screen name, everyone. It's not like Josh is not just calling him a fluster cluck. Yeah. Clock. Wow. That's hard to say.
Homage to Kevin and his idea that did not make it to the table.
Somebody else on Team Kevin, apparently. Antonio.
Oh, Kurt, I think Fluster Cluck did make it to the table, just not with Kevin's dish.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me yet again. Happy to be back. It is a kind of a bummer week, and I was definitely thinking about the Wiggler Fox household with the way that this episode played out. And I'm sure we'll get into it. But yeah, not great, Bob. Not great at all.
Yeah, definitely a bummer.
Somebody who's absolutely not a bummer, Michael Bloom.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here, the Danny Trejo of this podcast.
Yeah. Did you just, in a macho way, flash your sequined machetes?
Yeah, exactly. I actually have the name Bloom written on the inside of my jacket that I wear for all the podcasts that I do. And I just occasionally flash it just in case people need to see it. But
brought my blooms.
Exactly.
I love that culturally is a very specific thing, that you can be super macho with sequins. I absolutely think that that is incredible. And I'm not saying that it's not true. I just think that it is so hyper specific culturally. And I'm here for it.
Have you ever worn sequins, Antonio?
I'm sure I have. There's no way I haven't. Yes, yeah. I have.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, you can picture it and you know exactly the context and you just don't want to share it on a podcast.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Well, I wore a sequin belt once. I wore a sequin belt once, more than once, with a green leotard and a black bowler hat. And I was it was for we did characters for a St. Patrick's Day pub crawl year after year. And I'm trying to remember. I thought of it recently. I couldn't remember what my name was, but I was the villain of the affair.
So you wore this outfit more than one time is what you're telling me.
Oh, yeah. Can I drop pictures into the chat, or is that not a thing?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a thing.
I thought you were just talking about your torrid affair with Bob Fosse back in the day.
Oh, no.
You can just send it to our group chat.
I suppose I can.
Or share your homework.
For $99,000, patrons can actually get like an NSA invited drop into our group chat, so you can view all our pictures and things we text in the background.
It's very enemy of the state.
I think my name was Peppino Ballerino, now that I think about it. Anyway, yes, I've won.
How many Z's? How many R's?
No Z's, no R's. But I remember there's one R. I love the macho flashing of the sequence. I really am into that. I think it's. I just really think you could write a master's level thesis on the cultural implications of being macho with sequins.
I could, but I will not do that. I have nothing going on right now.
Let's see how long this goes, though. I mean, depending, we may need some.
There's a few things I will never be bored enough for. And one of those things is to write a master's thesis.
Mine's a puzzle.
Yeah.
Emily, I am right there with you.
I can't do it.
This is bad news for Kurt.
Everybody who's deriving joy from puzzles right now, I'm so sorry.
Are you talking specifically jigsaw puzzles?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't like...
I can co-sign that.
You don't like a broken picture telling you to put it back together?
I do that too much in real life, I feel like.
I don't know what Antonio's imbibing in if the puzzles are speaking to him, saying, put me back together.
Mushrooms, Mike.
It's mushrooms.
The going.
Not a secret.
Remini.
I heard a rumor that there was Top Chef on this week.
False.
I'm just trying to delay the inevitable. Like I said, I was really upset with the way that this episode played out. We are never going to see the story of the Middle Passage told through food. Top Chef is not interested in seeing it. I recognize that there was more to it than that, that Eric, it sounded like you failed with the actual preparation of the duck and that there were problems with the way the dish was delivered.
Even Eric admitted that.
Yes,
right?
Of course,
like,
repeatedly.
Oh, so good.
I kind of, yeah, it really sucks. spoiler alert, Eric has got home. I feel like Top Chef, or at least the judges, wanted this so badly. I felt like they almost set this challenge up for Eric to be able to try his hand at it again. And I wonder if Eric just like put too much pressure on himself and he was like, I know this is it. I know I have to do this. And he just biffed it, which is so disappointing because I know I'm not the only one who went into this. What? I said biffed it?
No, and Antonio said there's up for third. We got to see Peppino Ballerino, and my goodness, on so many levels.
If you've gotten to see it, the DMs are open. When I reinstall the Twitter app,
I don't see all of the leotard.
No, well, that's $20,000 patrons only.
Yeah, all right, so we're close. We're closing in on it. Yeah.
But I would agree with you, Haley. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily like, hey, this is Eric's challenge, because as was brought up, we have three pretty prolific restaurateurs who were also pitching things. And there were definitively, I think for the first time in a while, there were definitely definitive like strata of here are the people that are most experienced with this. And here are people who are not very experienced with this at all. And I think understandably, things probably shook out the way that they usually do. But it really was just like, it could have been a case where Eric was maybe building itself up too much, where like he was so close in that season 16 finale for not necessarily producing a restaurant, but like putting out this food in front of the judges. And he just missed it. He's like, I'm not going to, you know, miss my shot again. And maybe there was just so much mental work that went into that and designing the restaurant that, you know, I feel like maybe one of the reasons why he does end up going over Leanne is not only was the cookery bad, but also the concept. Even though he sort of has doubled down on the concept, it just came across as very wishy-washy. Whereas Leanne, as much as people felt the concept was trite, she at least had like a clear-cut vision for what she was doing.
Yeah, like I feel like if Eric presented as the food feels like fine dining, but the approach is not. It is like, it is friendly and warm and approachable because that's what the food, like that's what the style of the food is, friendly and warm and approachable. I felt like if he did that more than it's fine dining, but casual too, yeah.
You know, like wearing white gloves, but also Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah. But like, so I feel like if he would have, but I think again, he was too nervous and he was like so passionate about it that it was hard for him to just really get it all across. I don't remember where I was going with this.
Yeah, it was almost as if like, you know, he had like the concept for the menu and the story that the food is going to tell nailed down, but in terms of, well, what would be the experience for the diner, it seemed like he maybe hadn't fully thought that through,
which was weird to me. I don't know. Maybe it's because other restaurant wars are so focused on like the food. Because, I mean, they're basically doing a dry run of restaurant wars here. They're essentially saying, pitch the restaurant that's going to be in restaurant wars. And yes, there's a bit of talk about decor, but like, do we really need to care about price point or how many seats are in the dining room? Like, I was a little confused as to what portion of this was pitching just a general restaurant. And so you have to check certain number of boxes. And what percentage of it was, this is what we want to see next week for Restaurant Wars.
Mm-hmm. Although I did like Tom pointing out that he would love to see a dim sum trolley in Restaurant Wars. If he wanted to go with Leanne's concept.
Him and
just
me
for
both.
That.
And I think that the price point was important to set up considering the introduction next week of Quickfire tokens being.
Yeah, of course. As a whole new level of duplicity to Top Chef.
You had me for a second. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. That's happening? I was like, wait a second. No, not happening.
Yeah, Brian Malarkey's like, I've been extorted. I need 75 Quickfire tokens in order to open my restaurant.
Malarkey. Jesus.
He stresses me out.
By the way, I seriously thought that Brian Malarkey's restaurant concept was going to be about bowling until they went bowling.
Yeah, bowling. I got it.
Bowling. I'm like, yeah, exactly. And I was like, how is he going to do a bowling? Why is he doing a bowling themed restaurant? And then he's like, no, we're just all going bowling.
Can I just ask? Were you guys as blown away by his actual restaurant pitch as the judges seemed to be? Because they were like, wow, he really nailed it. And I don't feel like he did.
I still don't get the Shrek reference.
Yeah, I don't understand.
You don't get the Shrek reference?
I don't understand why that was.
Millennials love donkeys, and that's the Mexican. And then there was like the two Ds.
Donkey and dragon.
Donkey and Dragon. So,
but,
yeah.
But he's talking about like a Romeo and Juliet forbidden love. I don't know if you were not listening to the porn music that was like going on when he was pitching.
Shrek was a forbidden love because it was a hot princess. And,
and then they had babies, and it's very frightening.
Unless he was, unless the fact that he was like targeting millennials was so unique that, and like that he had.
That's not unique.
I don't know. Hold on.
No, in terms of
35. Like,
hold on.
Something's happened with Antonia.
Haley, did you say a Shrek? Like, Shrek is a race and not a name? Or a genius?
Antonio, do you need to call me out like that? I thought we were buds.
No, like, I think I prefer it that way. Cool. Like it's calling Dracula a Dracula. Like, yeah, I prefer it. Like, a Shrek, yeah.
Like later tonight, I'm going to have an alcohol.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know where that sentence was going. I thought you were going to get into it and dig into a Shrek.
Yeah,
I don't. No. Do you know how much of a prude I am?
Somebody once told me. But
oh, no. It's weird that his star-crossed, like, because he's crossing two cuisines, right? Because he's crossing Asian and Mexican, and he's talking about the forbidden love or whatever, that he's talking about star-crossed lovers, and his reference is Donkey and Dragon, which is like two different animal species that get it on, and they have weird, like, donkey dragon babies.
Yeah,
which is another thing to talk about.
Biologically, I can't imagine
they do mate, though, Josh. Like, that is an unspoken part of Shrek.
If this took place in like 1997 and South Park was still on the minds, it would definitely be pig and elephant, right? Because their DNA just won't splice.
Yes. So that's interesting that's his go to reference. I mean, has he not seen a movie in 15 years, or does he not know the classics? No other star-crossed lover. I don't know if he just wanted to call it D&D or what. What did he call it? D squared?
D2.
D2. Why not just the Mighty Ducks then? Yeah. I don't know.
But I think that I
have to be Gordon Bombay cuisine.
I would not be surprised though if positioning really benefited here.
Indeed, remember, Mike.
Because we'll remember, talking about bottom god.
That might help the donkey and dragon create the news.
Lord only knows waitress distribution and all. But I mean, he ended up pitching right after Leanne and Stephanie, both of which the judges were not big fans of. So, like, I think he did benefit from coming in this being like, well, this is different, this is entertaining, and at least this is a type of cuisine with, like, a point of view that is a little out there, and maybe his food wasn't completely there, but, like, I'm assuming that they probably overly delighted by the idea that he was giving out as opposed to what they just experienced. Like, if he went right after Kevin and Gregory, I don't know if he gets the same reception.
Yeah, I think it was definitely weighted more towards the delivery than the actual concept itself.
It's like, yeah, it's a lot of theater and less substance, it felt like.
Well, I guess I'm in the minority in that I thought it went really well. And honestly,
For what we expected from Brian, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I was trying to rack my brain and try to figure out, is this his best Top Chef moment? I know he's won challenges, and I know he's done things in the past, but this was just like, this is a guy who has gotten by this season on a lot of flop sweat, a lot of sales pitches. We've seen it. We've wondered on the podcast, like, what we're not seeing on the show that has kept him around. And it really seemed like, okay, this is going to be a big BS story, and it's going to be a lot of sales pitch and all that. And it didn't. For the people that take this very seriously, the rich guy, whatever his name was, and Stephanie, Kevin, and the people that were, his just replacement level rich guy, all those people were like, nailed it. He nailed it. And I think for Brian, like, that's your audience. That's who you're pitching to. Your job is to impress those people. He impressed them, regardless of what we felt or what we saw in the edit. I thought it was really impressive by Brian, honestly. And normally I'm like, okay, he's full of it, but he had them eating out of his hands. And yeah.
Which was another concept for a restaurant, by the way.
Right, which is, the plating would have been different.
Not the times of COVID, Michael. Yes.
Imagine my hands serving up steak, lobster.
I don't know. I was very happy.
Baby bird.
Oh, no!
That's a good idea for a restaurant, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that formal or good? Imagine white glove service, but puking into your mouth.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Oh my god, I'm upset. I'm gonna head out now.
If it's transferring from like a refined palate into yours, that might be good.
But I agree with Antonio. I actually thought he did really well here because this was his wheelhouse. Again, like he has 19 restaurants in the past 10 years or so. So like, he knows that the majority of the weight of this challenge is going to be in the pitch. Yep. Whereas maybe some other people, Brian Voltaggio, might have weighted more towards the dish than the concept. And so when you have the judges sitting there, they're going to much more look towards like, what are you providing me rather than like, okay, here's some food that you cooked, and then maybe like provide a very generic thing to sort of tie everything together that does not exactly wow us.
I just love how Voltaggio was like, I want it to be very accessible. And you're like, oh, yeah. This isn't accessible at all.
I'm surprised his mood board wasn't just beige.
He glued a plate to his mood board. Let's give him props.
That takes skill.
Yeah. These are what the plates will look like.
They will be flat. They will not be vertical.
Yeah, this is not a real approximation.
Please
will
don't
not
take this too literally.
I think accessibility is actually a really good way to describe some of the issues I might have with Brian Voltaggio's food in terms of a viewer. Like, I can watch it and know that he's making incredible food and understand that he's taking these ingredients that like and using them in ways that really like seem just top notch. And clearly he blows away people who have these refined palates and who know what's up. But he has not always popped off the screen to me for that reason. And leaving aside any of the jokes about being replacement level white guy or being boring or whatever it is, like, I just think his food in the inaccessibility of it, I think jumps off the screen for me more than the accessibility of it, more than any personality quirks. Like, I say what you will about Brian Malarkey, when he's talking about a gochujang mole, like, I'm all in on that. I'm less in on whatever Brian Voltaggio is doing because I don't necessarily understand. I would go to Brian Voltaggio's restaurants to learn about food, to try things I never thought about or never understood. I would go to other people's restaurants and say, in people, including the pitches that were here today, and say, okay, I know all these things. I've never had them in the way you're talking about. This is blowing my mind. So it's a different, I think it's a different audience. And I think this is interesting that this is Brian Voltaggio's version of accessible. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, when it came time to pitch a product to the public, what was he making? He was making like
seafood bolognese or something.
Seafood bolognese, which is fine.
But
I think people recognize, I think the comment was even made, like the barrier for sale is going to be pretty high for that. It's a great product. And for the people that like it, they're going to really like it. But as far as generally accessible, like maybe that barrier is going to be a lot higher. And I think that's something he struggles with. I'd be interested to talk to him about like, what would a Brian Voltaggio hot chicken restaurant look like? What would a Brian Voltaggio like hamburger restaurant look like? Like, I'm curious how he would elevate those concepts because
that's what Richard Blaze ended up doing. A lot of the restaurants he ended up opening up were like fried chicken joint, like stuff where like he's taking his like science wizardry and applying them to like not like basic food, but like comfort food.
Sure.
Easy food, accessible food. I think you're talking about a very similar thing that I agree I would really like to see out of Voltaggio.
So instead of like a kitchen rescue restaurant sort of, you know, rehab show, I see one with Brian up the voltage where it's all about Brian Voltaggio going into okay restaurants and like Voltaggioing them.
But he would be like, here's what I'm going to show you. I'm going to do very delicate knife cuts. And like everyone's just going to be like, okay.
I respect what you're doing here, but let me respect it a bit more. Also, by the way, props to him. You're literally using the machete prop for that fine knife work during the
quick fire. Yeah, only Brian Voltaggio would like be able to use like the French to like Julianne, you know, the stuff that he was using.
Makes me wonder what he would do with a machete, like if he was stranded in the jungle to like get through the vines. Like he would just like very finely cut through the vines with like.
I'd love to see Brian Voltaggio as a Survivor player, but now that image is in my head, and I don't know what it would be like.
He strikes me as a really brilliant guy who knows how to do some really incredible things with food. And he understands, I think, I'm thinking a lot about Brian Voltaggio because coming into the season, he was clearly one of the heavyweights, clearly one of the top people. And yet here we are, what, more than halfway in, and only three people have won elimination challenges. He's not one of them. And some of the struggles that he's had seem to rest on this accessibility element. And I think that's just, I think it's an interesting thing to think about when you're talking about somebody who's clearly so brilliant and clearly so good at what they do, but what they do maybe isn't necessarily always going to pop in the way that these competitions are calling for. There's a casino near me in Cincinnati that just opened up a restaurant, and it's a Fabio restaurant. So Fabio came to like rural Indiana to open his restaurant, and I didn't go, and I haven't even looked at the menu, but I gotta imagine he's not doing his highest end cuisine at this rural Indiana casino. He's probably doing Fabio's version of things like chicken parm, or, you know, dialed down traditional Italian food. So I don't know.
Probably what coastal Italian is. Seafood.
Maybe coastal. Oh, Josh referencing.
I'm really in. I'm in the tank. On
I imagine lots of birds in the Fabio themed restaurant, but just plated in a very nasty way.
But no turtles. Yeah, that's right. So I just it's an interesting thing to think about with Top Chef, which is so certainly always very high end and very fine dining, that they were criticizing him for that, that they were criticizing him and criticizing others for not understanding how to thread that needle. Eric had the same problem. Is it white glove service or is it baby bird service?
But I think what they wanted from Voltaggio was just to say it's a fine dining restaurant. That is my style.
Right.
And he didn't do that. He tried to do something that maybe just doesn't really fit his style of food. And I think maybe these chefs are almost like afraid to say they're fine dining and maybe eliminate some potential customer base. Because like fine dining, not everyone can go to, and you know, saying that on TV is like, we don't want the poorest to come to this restaurant. Like that's not a great look, right? But Michael Voltaggio, like that's what he does. He does fine dining. I'm not saying he tells pores not to come. I'm just saying he does fine dining. You know, maybe his style could have been fine dining, but at a lower price point.
Right. I mean, you can't say this is an everyday restaurant and then say, and we're serving game hen. You know, like those concepts just don't match up.
Yeah, you could easily do. Well, I'm not saying easily, but you could do a style of more accessible food, but in a fine dining preparation or like a look or whatever. You could make that happen. I just don't think he understood how to connect what it is he does with a different audience than what he has.
Or go for like the second, like the more colloquial definition of fine, like it was fine dining. And then like it's like we're redefining fine dining.
I'm going for the most mediocre food, the most passable level of cuisine.
How was your meal? It was fine.
Yeah. All right, we've done our job. Here's your check. It's between $50 to $65.
Another possibility could be Miss Fine Dining.
Yes!
It was fine, the nanny. That was not a great
I liked it. Anyway. Obviously, this is why we're married.
Yeah, we got one left.
Miss, she need a cocktail.
Yeah.
Well, I guess on that note, because I feel like, Kaylee, what you're describing was not exactly what Stephanie was going for, but I feel like sort of this idea of right, like comfort food, but elevated to a certain extent. But that being said, that also just seemed to miss the mark, because that did feel, I would honestly feel like that was probably the most generic concepts. And I think much like Eric, even Stephanie was like, this is not my challenge. Thank God I have immunity.
Yeah. When I heard her say that, I was like, oh no, Stephanie. Because I do believe that is her style. But I just wish she could have gone a little farther and did something other than a dip.
Mm-hmm. A dip in schnitzel.
A dip in schnitzel.
Maybe you can dip the schnitzel
in the dip.
Dip in schnitzel.
Yeah, she did say the restaurant was named after her dog. Maybe the dog was a dip in schnitz.
Yeah,
hop on down to the local dip in schnitz.
I felt like that was a really awkward way to introduce it. Like, I used to have this dog.
Yeah, so today you'll be eating dog.
Well, you know, everything that she now made, like,
thanks for reminding me.
I would be very happy to eat what she made. You know, give me the schnitz. That sounds great. Some salt and vinegar dip. That sounds great. If the restaurant's giving you the schnitz, I don't think you're going back. No, give me the schnitz. I'm here. Oh, I'm ready for the schnitz.
I went to this great new restaurant and I had the schnitz all night long.
Yeah.
I have a weak stomach, so I wouldn't blame it specifically on the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think when she was saying, thank God I have immunity, I think to me, I took that more as she's never pitched a concept before versus her being uncomfortable with the cooking and the thinking behind it. I think it seemed like it was more the pitch, where if you're leading with your dog, maybe that, you know, just reflects that. But
I don't know. I mean, I feel like one ties into the other, right? Because she didn't come up with a concept until very, very late in the game. And so she's like, oh, okay, dip. And I'll throw that in. And so
dead maybe, dog.
Yeah, and because there was more trepidation involved, then I think that may have caused. Because, I mean, apparently the schnit, as much as Josh may have loved the idea, apparently it did not turn out very good. And it's this concept, this Top Chef adage, right? If you're going to make something simple, it better be the best damn simple dish that we've ever tasted.
True.
But I think
that schnitz better be the shiznitz.
Schnitz Creek. I think, sorry, I just really needed to say that.
Grab Schnitz Creek without a poodle.
Uncle Tonio.
No, I think, you know, when you really boil it down, people don't pitch restaurant ideas within a 24-48 hour period, right? So the fact that Stephanie was so far out of her league, I think, in this particular challenge, just by virtue of not having ever done it before and then having to come up with a theme or a concept so quickly, that was just two strikes against her, I think.
And I feel bad that at the end she's like, I'm going to go back to being a private chef. Like, do not let this experience. It'd be like if you failed at Restaurant Wars, and you're like, I guess I'm never working in a restaurant again. As Emily says, the Top Chef experience is not indicative of you as a chef or the culinary experience. Like, you pitch all you want. Just pitch My Shitty Little Kitchen, the restaurant. But like, you be able to take your time and use resources and to workshop this rather than being given a piece of poster board in 24 hours to make the restaurant of your dreams.
And well, endless scrapbook paper.
At least like future seasons, they'll now know to anticipate this is coming. It's a little drag racing in terms of, you know, Snatch Game is coming. You can come in prepared for it. It would have almost been better, though, I think, or maybe not better, but it would have been interesting for, like on Drag Race, where the contestants are given a heads up as to some of the types of challenges that are going to be coming in terms of to prepare their wardrobe. It'd be interesting if they had been given. So this season, you're going to have to, you know, pitch a restaurant idea. So come with something that you're ready to create the pitch board, the mood board while you're here, but have that in the back of your head. It would have been nice if they'd been prompted for it a little bit.
I wonder if they just expected that you're a chef, you have an idea for a restaurant floating around in there.
Yeah, that's kind of what Stephanie said. She basically said, I want to steal your idea. I mean, she didn't say that, but that's what I expect. That's what it felt like to me. She was basically just like, I want to see your dream restaurants. I know you've all got a dream restaurant idea. Let's see it. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we know you've been kicking it around. What is it? And I don't blame these chefs if they didn't want to like let it spill in the course of, you know, one episode, especially with a rich guy there who opens restaurants for a living. And I don't think you can get rich and open restaurants for a living without being a little shady. No offense. No offense. People are listening. I'm sure it's true. And then Stephanie there, who has basically said, I want your ideas. So I don't know. It's a very difficult position to be in, I think, if you're Stephanie or if you're an Eric or if you're somebody like Anini, if she had been in this situation, people who don't have restaurants or have struggled to open restaurants, pitch your dream idea on a show and get it edited down so it looks bad. If you do, if, you know, you're in no control of how it appears on the screen.
Yeah,
and then any potential investors you might have.
Like, this is very tough for Eric, who's like hard on his sleeve, has now tried Middle Passage twice. And like, it's just like swung and a miss on two separate high stakes instances. He's gone home on both times on Top Chef here. And this is very clearly his dream. Yeah. That sucks. And like the reality of how it played out in person must have been, you know, bad enough to send him home both times, give the benefit of the doubt. But still, like you're saying, Antonio, the edited TV product, it's just not enough to like articulate the complexity and like the heat behind that vision. And that blows. It makes me wonder, is the move here on a challenge like this for two reasons, to really just try and like hit the middle and not be high or low? Because this way, like you don't needlessly sell your dream restaurant concept to the corporate overlords. You don't risk that. Just come up with something that's passable and serviceable and something that you can very clearly deliver on so that you're in the middle zone. But also because we know that going into Restaurant Wars, like, we got to imagine that Kevin and Gregory are both the respective top picks to go home next week, right?
Because
they are in the driver's seats.
That's like, what Leanne was talking about.
I don't think you want to win this one. I don't think you want to be Kevin and Gregory this week.
Leanne was saying, like, how do you balance that? Like, how do you balance not wanting to win and ending up being on the chopping block next week with doing poorly so much that you go home this week? And I think that doesn't even speak to the unspoken meta part, which is if you're Brian Malarkey and you pitch the hell out of a really sizzling concept that I think people would find appealing, you have no control over the legitimately millions of people that will eventually see the episode, including many people in the industry. Stealing your idea, just using your idea.
Unless you open the restaurant right after the season ends,
before it goes on air. Did he do that? Did anyone do that? Do you know, Mike?
Any Donkeys and Dragons based restaurants in Southern California we know about? I mean, it's also it's also extremely tough to pitch and open a restaurant, especially in that short of a time frame. But right. I don't know. I'm not seeing any sort of like social network Facebook-esque stuff going on right now with Stephanie Izard stealing people's concepts to open up restaurants, especially at this time.
Can you imagine Stephanie Izard opening a Mexican Asian joint?
Take the girl and the girl and the goat and the dragon
and the donkey. Now.
Exactly. It fits right in there. Or the princess and a Shrek.
The princess and a Shrek.
I wonder the way to handle this is to like, you know, cook your heart out, do your best, get into the top. But before they actually announce the winner, tank your game while you're standing there as having been knighted one of the top three. It's like, I did a great job. But you know what? You know, this person next to me provided a lot of my help. I couldn't have done it without them. Yeah. So it's like,
I stole my dish from Gregory.
Exactly.
You know, I opened up Gregory's notebook and I saw the idea. So I just pulled a Mike Isabella and copied it.
Ooh, well, hopefully that's the least offensive part of pulling a Mike Isabella. So we should be still lucky.
Yeah.
Careful.
Surprise,
surprise, it's an episode of Top Chef 17. And so one combination of Kevin, Gregory, or Melissa are going to win this one. And
it was interesting seeing the four people at the top of the elimination challenge. And it did feel like a vision of the future. It felt like a vision of the final four.
You think Malarkey could slip in there?
Yeah, I do. I think that he is such a shyster that I think that he could totally make it. But it felt like that's the crew. That's the crew. It's Kevin, it's Gregory, it's Melissa, and it's Malarkey. Like, these are sort of the power players of the season. Whether or not Malarkey stresses the shit out of you, which, hi! Yeah! Big time yes! Big time yes!
Who stresses you out more, Malarkey or Leanne?
That's a really
Malarkey energetically, Leanne fatalistically. Like, just the dark vortex that Leanne seems to be gravitating towards. And even talking about it this week when she's like, Eric seems to really be in the weeds right now. Trust me, I know, I've been there. It's like, dude, you're there. You're also currently there. You're in the weeds.
All right. I want to put something out here, too, because now I feel like we're starting to get to that part that occasionally occurs in a Top Chef season when somebody finishes in the bottom a bunch of times and people are like, well, clearly this season is fixed so that Leanne is going to stay in the game because she has connections with production. And maybe I'm naive. I do not feel that. I honestly think with Top Chef,
I haven't seen that take, so. I'm not on Top Chef Reddit, so I don't know what
I honestly think with Top Chef, it honestly does come down to like whoever cooked the worst dish that day. Like, and I would say look no further than a good amount of the people who have won Top Chef. I don't think the judges have been particularly excited to crown some of these people Top Chef, considering the end game of the people. Do you think they really wanted to, as much as our hearts go out to Hosea and his daughter right now, do you think they really looked at him, Stefan, and Carla and said, we're going to give it to Jose on this one. I'm really excited about him. No, it's about the dish that you put out that day. And I think that Leanne has just really been able to benefit from the fact that every single time she's been in the bottom, people have cooked worse than her.
Yeah. No, that's it's.
I feel like they wanted Eric to stay on this, but they just could not justify it, considering that his food was the worst. I actually think that probably Stephanie's food was the worst, and it's some sort of funny little serendipity or whatever that she had immunity and she was probably had the worst
that taco challenge.
I really don't think they wanted to send Eric home, but just based on the food, they had to. At the end of the day, Top Chef is about food, and his dishes were, guess what, I would still absolutely eat them and probably be like, oh my god, this is delicious. But the
duck red visually dry, like when like you can see that on screen, like that was tough. It was tough. And when I saw it, when they do like the glamour shot, when they're like explaining their dish and you could see that like the duck kind of had that like aerated sort of like rare, but not really crusty look to it. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, you didn't render it right.
Well, Eric's, Tom says outright, this is just bad technique. And Eric actually talks about it in Last Chance Kitchen, this episode of like, you can't pull the wool over Tom's eyes when it comes to technique. So like, I feel like he's going to nail you first and foremost on that. So if you have a bad technique, you're going to be at least guaranteed to be in the bottom, if not outright, like very much contention for elimination.
Yeah. And you could just see it on Eric the whole way through. He's like, I'm sorry, Tom. I'm sorry. Like he knew.
Was this stuff for you to watch, Antonio?
Yeah, it just seemed like it started early. It wasn't just knowing all along. You're right. I mean, he was talking about being exhausted the minute that he's waking up and cutting the succulents out to put on his dream board or whatever. It's like he really seemed to struggle the whole time. Like he was up late. And I don't know where that struggle was rooted. I don't know if it was rooted in the previous failure. I don't know if it was rooted in the real fervent desire to like make sure people understood the power of this concept, the pressure of that, the desire to really do well with it. I don't know where the pressure came from initially, but clearly it affected every link in the chain and throughout the way everything was connected. Every bit of the connectivity of this had that stress point in it. So the stress point that came from him staying up late led to the stress point of having issues with the prep. The issues with the prep led to the stress point of issues with the delivery and not being able to properly articulate it. It just every single element of the process that was linked together had stress from the previous element, and then it built. And I think that was really tough for him. I don't know where it started, and I imagine it goes deeper than just I was tired and it's Top Chef. I think it's I was on the previous season. I maybe didn't have as much time to process that failure. I maybe haven't had as much time to grow and to think about what that looked like on TV or deal with how much I really wanted to sell that concept. So I just felt terrible the whole time for Eric. And you could see it coming, like you said, when he's talking to Tom all throughout, you could just see it coming a mile away. And it was just hard to watch. So Josh, you've said on our Better Call Saul podcast all season long that slow motion car wreck. And that's absolutely what it felt like. It just felt like this is coming down the tracks and I don't want to see it.
Yeah, I agree.
See, I can say that since I talked to Eric this week, because I agree with you, I thought that it would be connected back to last season. From what he told me, that didn't seem to necessarily be the case. Seemed like he was super pumped. And all that happened, according to him, is that halfway through his cook, he just realized he lost track of time, and that just sort of caused a chain reaction of things to happen. And he felt like he overcommitted to things, so maybe it was less about the design of the restaurant and more to just like he had too much stuff to prepare. So that maybe it's less psychological and more just like he really wanted to make this the best thing possible and just put out too much stuff out there in the ether that he couldn't grab as much as he wanted to.
And again, that is psychological, though. That desire to really make it as good as possible comes from a psychological place of desiring to really improve that or to improve upon the concept or to prove the concept. And I don't know when the confessionals were recorded. Or how that was done in the order of events. But he is giving that confessional about being exhausted when he wakes up in the morning and is cutting those succulents down. So that's probably after he knows he's been eliminated and he's telling the story so that it seems like there's a link there. And now he's telling you something different when he goes out. It's also possible, and I'm not saying this in any way, it's possible that whatever psychological impact all of his time on Top Chef has had on him, it's not even really fully processed yet. So when he talks to you, it's I tried to do too much, but he hasn't processed why I tried to do too much and what that means in terms of his previous seasons on Top Chef. We've talked to so many people in our time, reality TV wrap-ups or other podcasts that we've done who have been on these reality shows from at various stages of their lives, 5 years out, 10 years out, 1 year out, one season after. And you can see that sort of psychological process evolve through these people who have, and some people don't get past it. Some people on some of these other shows, they're on the show and they don't process it for the rest of their lives, or it takes them a really long time to do so. And I got to imagine that for Eric, the downfall of what happened in Top Chef Kentucky has to be something that he has carried with him, even if it's in a positive way, even if it's I'm going to improve on that, it is a motivating factor. And so it's hard to watch people that need. I really want Eric to get the platform to show everybody, what that restaurant is. And it's tough that we haven't gotten to see that.
I think one interesting thing we hear actually from Gregory is that, you know, it's really hard to execute a vision that is so close to you, that you have such, you know, love for. So I think that definitely translates to Eric's situation. And obviously Gregory on the other side of things nails it and does a really excellent job with his Haitian concept. But I think that there's a lot of psychological sort of mining to be done with a lot of this that Eric probably will be working through for the next little while. I do know for a fact that he cooked Middle Passage, the concept for a fundraiser last year for the Museum of Food and Drink, who I'm friends with a lot of the people that work there. And they were really excited because he was sort of this, this, you know, excellent, just coming off of Top Chef, not being able to execute this meal, and then showed up and did it for the actual gala. So that would have been really cool to sit in on and, you know, see. But, you know, I think he's seeing other platforms sort of show up, maybe not in the way we want him to, maybe, you know, obviously not on Top Chef, unfortunately. But I really think this is something he's going to keep coming back to. And I really look forward to watching it evolve even further than it already has.
Antonio, you've talked about Kevin as somebody who, like, you could just, like, sit down and listen to talk about food forever. I feel that way about Eric as well. I feel that way about Kevin for sure, but I feel that way about Eric in a big way. And I think a lot of that is because Eric speaks to me as a guy who has little room in his life for bullshit and has little room in his life for anything being superfluous. Like, I think he's very, like, true. I think he's very true to a fault. And I think, like, his anxiety about all of this was very true. I think his love for this concept was very, very true. And he just speaks with sort of a gravitas about the things that he wants and the way that he's interested in examining food that I loved as a viewer. Getting a chance to engage in that. Eric is one of my favorite Top Chef contestants in a good little while. I'm really sad to see him go here.
I know he was on my
last week when, you know, people were getting kicked out and slamming the door out of our chat here, we were saying, like, who's the one person that we can lose before Restaurant Wars? And
yeah, mouse is hovering over a certain removed from stream option right now.
But Eric was never an option for anybody, because I think people wanted to see him continue, even if it wasn't his restaurant concept. He just seems like a really great guy, and I think I would argue, and maybe this is a bit of a hot take, that he brings probably the most unique perspective in Top Chef history, where I don't know how many more people are going to come onto the show and cook out of the African diaspora. If they do, I think that Eric is going to be the big inspiration for them to do so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he really brought a style of cuisine that none of us from our sort of perspectives, nor the judges, had really experienced before. And I think that no matter what happened with this restaurant concept, not once, but twice, like, that should be acknowledged. And you saw throughout the season as well that I think Eric felt so comfortable at all times, because if he learned anything from his first season, it's like, it's that tried and true lesson, cook what you know, like, cook where you're coming from. And the more that Eric leaned into that, be him, you know, marketing his Calypso Bell sauce or making doubles, you know, that's what really got him success. So I hope that people remember that, and I hope he remembers that as well.
Well, and it, not for nothing, it's not lost on me that Kevin wins in part by cooking a dish that was inspired by the quote spice trade. And you can't talk about, like, the early North American spice trade without talking about something that is rife with slavery, that is rife with the sort of just abuse and the sorts of things that Eric's cuisine, and especially talking about the Middle Passage, is tied up on a very different end of. Kevin's talking about how people that had already settled in America or who are living here started to cook cuisine influenced by the very same cultures or the very same places that were being brought into the country with a lot of the people that Eric is trying to carry on his back and cook for. And the other thing is, Mike, I think you're right in terms of people being on the show and being a voice and being influenced by things. There are people probably who have cooked cuisine on this show that was extremely influenced by the sorts of things that Eric has cooked or is talking about. What Eric is doing is, like Emily, like master's level food work.
Yeah,
where
it's academic.
He's thinking about it from a cultural perspective, from an academic perspective, from a perspective that says, you know, food does not occur in a vacuum. Food represents cultures. Food represents so much to so many different kinds of people. It speaks to issues of class. It speaks to issues of race. It speaks to all these issues that our society has processed. It is a lens through which you can analyze and look at all that stuff. And Eric really thinks about it on that level. And for me, it's disappointing. On a challenge like this, there are a lot of people who are half-assing their pitches or who are not really going all in. Eric Hull asked his and he went home. And that's upsetting, because, you know, it's something that's important to him. But I do agree, Haley, with what you were saying, which is that ultimately this is Top Chef, and it seemed like he didn't fail because of the concept. He failed because he cooked the duck bad, and he cooked the duck bad probably because he had all those things in his mind, and he's bringing all that into the challenge like we're talking about. So at the end of the day, I don't think it's certainly not a failure of concept. It is a failure of delivery, but I think the failure of delivery was so heavily influenced by everything that he was trying to do when he brought this to the table. And I think that's the part that's harder to watch, that he failed for trying to do that. And not that he failed because he created a restaurant for his dog that had schnitz and dip. No offense to Stephanie.
Well, that's an interesting thing as well. I was actually a little surprised that they outright put Stephanie in the bottom three rather than what they did with like Kevin a few episodes ago of put Karen in the bottom three and then have Padma be like, by the way, Stephanie, had you not had immunity, you would be in the bottom as well. Because I think that maybe they want to take some pity on Karen because it's clear she is extremely exhausted. It seemed like she was not only up all night cooking LCK, but then was promptly sequestered away from everybody else so that she could come back and be a big surprise. But like,
yeah, what's that about? They made her sleep in a hotel for one night.
Put her in the fridge. I think they
probably
wanted
better than the bunk beds.
They probably wanted I don't know, but the bunk beds are growing slowly more and more empty. So they have more room, at least they could push them together. But
they pulled her out from a trundle.
Yeah, exactly.
Karen's been here the whole time.
But it seems like, even though they liked her dishes, it seemed like her concept did not really work either, right? Or at least the dishes that she cooked to represent that concept. Tom was much more fixated on the Italian and Chinese of the focaccia scallion pancake than the modern.
A lot of people making the sourdough scallion pancake right now.
This is just a thinly veiled attempt to get me to make it for you.
It's not that thin.
The pancake is deliciously thin, Josh.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've seen a lot of scallion pancakes lately.
Yeah.
God, I am this. Dying for one. Yeah. I am dying for a scallion.
I've seen a lot of Brian scallion pancakes as well. It's so much on Twitter.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. I was fixated, Josh, on the fact that Karen apparently is related to Dewey Crow. She's part of the Crow family.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. She's
that's
one
distant,
of the crows.
Man. That's that's a little scary.
I'm surprised she didn't make kidney pie.
Yeah.
Oh, this is for the Justified fans, and that's it.
Oh, she got a turtle dog casserole. Yes. Fits right in at Stephanie's restaurant.
All right, somebody swoop in, otherwise we're just going to go all the way down the coal mine.
I named this Three Crows after the three crows that I had as pets.
Yeah.
They're very good with tools, you know.
They're all dead now.
Their names were Tom, Padma, and Gale.
Isn't that a coincidence? Yeah. Anyway, here's dim sum.
It really would have been fun to see Dim Sum Carton Restaurant Wars.
Yeah, it would have been great to see somebody.
We saw that. We saw Dim Sum Carts. Do you guys not remember Top Chef All-Stars 1 where there was Dim Sum Carts and it was a disaster? Yeah.
But Josh brings up a good point. And the thing that's going to make this Restaurant Wars super interesting is that in every single Restaurant Wars previously, it was collaborative. And it's like, let's all settle on a concept. This time, it's Gregory and Kevin walking in and saying, you're cooking Haitian. You're cooking, you know, a little bit of like Southern Asian inspired food. So like essentially these other three are really going to like have to follow their orders on this.
We did see this in Top Chef Seattle.
Oh, right.
When Kristen and somebody who I don't remember,
Micah, I think his name was,
won the week before. And it was basically the setup, like pitch a restaurant, you know, whenever, blah, blah, blah. You win, you get the thing. And then, you know,
I'm wondering
I'm
wondering how many of the chef testants actually pitched their dream restaurant versus pitching something they thought would be appropriate, would get picked for Restaurant Wars. I think there's like, because we've talked about, do you want to, you know, pitch the dream and have the dream, like, you know, in 24 hours and have it edited down for TV versus, you know, if this is really just to get something onto Restaurant Wars and just in the service of this competition, you know, because I'm sure even though people weren't necessarily prepped to, you know, be ready to pitch your dream restaurant. People do know Restaurant Wars is coming, and they probably have ideas for what that theme should be, even if there isn't going to be a unilateral decision maker necessarily.
So sure, I think we should go down the list. Okay, so Kevin, dream restaurant or
that would have been Fluster Clucks would have been his dream restaurant.
Well, I think
this is in between. I feel like also, it is a dreamish restaurant.
It's tough. It's like a daydream restaurant. It's tough to say dream restaurant as well for these people that have opened restaurants, because wouldn't you assume that like they've opened their dream restaurant by now? There's not like a golden ticket that they're still waiting to grab after all these years.
If you can achieve it, it's not a dream. Yeah. It's a goal.
I feel like Eric's is absolutely a dream. Gregory's is a dream. Voltaggio is, I don't even know if he was trying to do Restaurant Wars. I think he was just like,
well, I think he just Thatcher wanted us all to know his son was named Thatcher. Yeah.
Yeah. And he wanted to like,
I thought it was maybe Margaret Thatcher themed at first. I'm glad we got the full story.
This is named after my favorite prime minister, Margaret Thatcher.
Bag of Chips is just standing at the entrance welcoming people in.
I try the
Iron Lady Fingers.
I hate
named after my boys, Thatcher and Rye.
Well, that's he knew a surprising amount about like, and Rye production was very popular in the mid. It's like, I feel like I'm on an audio tour of a museum right now.
Did he actually know a surprising amount, or did he know the exact amount that we thought Brian Vitale would know about Rye?
Yeah. Karen's felt dreamish. Leanne's was Restaurant Wars. Stephanie's was a fluster cluck.
Nightmare.
I agree.
Yeah.
Not Malarkey's was Restaurant Wars.
Yeah, he's just rattled.
Melissa's was dream.
I could say Malarkey's is probably like a newfound dream. Like, I also wonder, you know, if we're speaking about preparation, like, did he just happen to like have something in the quick fire? He's like, oh yeah, this would be a good idea. Or do you think this was
that's absolutely what happened.
And if that's then we should commend him even more for, again, being able to impress the judges with a concept he came up with a day ago from the quick fire that he just happened to.
He's talented at this, obviously. This is something that he's the $50,000 patrons can see that, like, there's a weariness to me right now as I say these words. That, like, I think that clearly he's good at the pitch, he's good at the restaurant development, he's an ideas guy, and that seems to really resonate with the people that you need to impress within the competition of Top Chef.
Yeah,
definitely.
Mr. Malarkey.
I think that's probably how I would have been. It would have been easier for me to operate. Is what's the dish I just made? And what kind of restaurant do I potentially see this being, like, either like it was a taco, so potentially like, you know, a small plate at, or so I actually, it kind of pigeonholed. If everybody had done this, it would have been unfortunate because it was a very kind of specific and niche quickfire. But, you know, that's, you know, sometimes if you need the prompt to get started on this ideation, you know, you just made a dish in restaurant or in the quickfire. I actually like the idea of, okay, now let's blow this up. And what's the concept that this dish resides in? So kudos to him for taking that and at least being able to pitch it.
If you had to come up with a restaurant concept right now to pitch.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yes.
I've had one for a while.
Go ahead, Curtis.
Go ahead.
So have any of you been to like a rotary sushi restaurant where they got the conveyor belt or the moat?
I've seen your Instagram stories about it. Does that count?
That does count. But so, you know, the concept of it, I've always wanted to do something like that, except it's a sliders restaurant.
Ooh.
And you get the toppings and the meat choices on the little conveyor belt. So, oh, I want some of that caviar on my little mini slider burger, or I want some of that baby spinach.
Oh, this doesn't sound very accessible, Kurt, if you're putting caviar in there.
No, but the thing is very accessible because all the food
cheap
comes.
Cheap caviar.
Yeah, it's cheap caviar, like sushi caviar, like a little bit of roe. So that's been my concept. Fry. Is how can I take like a sushi restaurant with a conveyor belt sushi that's gone under, but then convert it into some sort of like burger diner, but still using the conveyor belt in some way?
I like it. I like the name Sliders, and I think you could partner up with Jerry O'Connell.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have a
but
real
then the next week it changes into a completely different restaurant.
It's a different restaurant every week.
Alternate universe. Yeah, yeah. Mine's super simple. It's called Full Bloom. It's plant forward.
Wow.
Mine's pretty simple as well. It's called Wiggler, and it's just worms that wiggle, and you eat them alive.
Come on.
Did anybody read the book How to Eat Fried Worms growing up?
That sounds familiar. That
sounds familiar. Sounds familiar.
Was it by the guy who wrote Holes?
I don't think so.
Louis Sachar.
Underreported. It's time for a message from our sponsor. And we're back.
I don't know. I do think that the only times that I have like fairly decent instincts in the kitchen is where it comes to pizza. So I think I would have to do some sort of pizza restaurant.
It could be Pizza Daddy.
It could be Pizza Daddy. Pizza Daddy could be the way for me to go. I think that that's like the only realm within the cooking arena that I feel like I've got it.
What if it was like Pete Zaddy?
Pizza Zaddy? No, Pete Zaddy. Hi, I'm Pete Zaddy. is anyone out there named Peter Zaddy?
That's the mascot, though, is like you have to make like the colonel for KFC. There is Pete Zaddy.
Yeah. I'm Pete Zaddy, and he's like a really handsome father.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not prepared for it.
Sounds like one of the characters on Dream Daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So
I'm too busy Googling Peter's Daddy.
Haley, what would your restaurant be?
I don't know if I'd go for a restaurant as much as a food truck. I feel like that kind of fits my personality a little bit more. And because Niagara is so plentiful in its produce, I think I would try and do something very Niagara focused and highlighting what's available. But I don't really know what kind of food. What a great question. Didn't really think about that.
What's the Niagara cuisine?
Well, because we are sandwiched in between two lakes, a lot of fish. Get it from Lake Erie. Don't get it from Lake Ontario. That's just a hot tip.
The shade.
Some fish, and then there's a lot of farms. So, like, you know, you could do any meat, really.
The fish in the farm.
Fish and fruit.
Yeah, and then, you know, we're famous for our peaches and cherries when those are...
Haley, are you just describing an Animal Crossing island by any chance?
Ooh.
Can you not catch me?
A turnip-forward restaurant?
Yeah.
Fish, where the prices change every day?
Should cherries. I get Animal Crossing? The thing is, it is $80 CAD, which is a little bit hard to... You know,
ooh, 80 CAD. But if you're putting daily investment in it, which you should in these types of life sims, I feel like it's worth the price point. It's not just one of these things that you'll like play and then put down and then never pick up again. It's something that you are contributing time to.
Sure. I have been playing The Sims for a month straight. I feel like I'm getting my endless screen time from that.
I forgot that you picked up The Sims. Yeah.
What a mistake on my part.
If you're simming your way through life, you don't necessarily need Animal Crossing. But I read an article. This is just such an aside, but I read an article that said it's like the most therapeutic game that's out there right now, Animal Crossing. And I don't know. People seem to be stressed by it, but for me, it has been a great form of therapy. And anyone is welcome to visit my island if they want.
I appreciate the community of it. Like, I would love if The Sims, I could like go actually visit my friends.
It's really fun.
Yeah, they take the ladders out of their pools so that all their people drown.
Okay, no, in Sims 4, they can't do that. Like, they just can get out of the pool.
Ooh, you can't kill people. I'm excited.
Kill people. There are many ways. Like, for example, I bought the Tiny Living stuff pack. And so it's just, like, based on micro homes. And then so one of the objects in that is a Murphy bed. But it breaks every single night. And so if you use this Murphy bed, your sim will probably die.
Just flat back into the wall and get
it's going to get smushed.
Yeah. Or they get caught under it trying to like,
that's a pretty gnarly death.
Yeah.
All you have to do is remove all the doors from a room. Boom. Done.
Yeah.
I heard Murphy beds kill 30,000 people a year. I don't know what you're talking about.
Voltaggio?
No.
I was gonna say, my restaurant theme is the Murphy bed.
Exactly.
All the tables fold up into the wall.
I feel like Brian Mullarky was like a couple of ideas away from like pitching a sitcom themed restaurant, right? Like, we all love Seinfeld. What if you ate in Jerry's apartment? Yeah.
You could have a big salad. You could have Snapple.
Roasters.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he had pitched the bowling themed restaurant that I thought he was going to.
That sounds fun. Bowling themed restaurant elevated bowling food. Amazing.
Dude, let's put on our tinfoil chef's hats here. Was that actually Brian Mullarky, or do you think that was production mandated of like, no, go have fun tonight, guys. You're all stressed out. Go bowling. Like, does Brian Mullarky have that power to be like, I want to go bowling, and so we're all going to go bowling tonight?
It felt very MTV's challenge-ish in terms of, and now we're going to take a break and go out and have fun and drink.
We're going to jump into our BMWs.
Yeah. I think it was just, you know, they need to have fun.
Karen rolling up in her BMW, by the way, was so dope. I love that product placement. Drop that.
And I was surprised she was coming back because I thought there was only one Last Chance Kitchen. to that point, the fact that, Emily, I think you raise a good point, is, you know, this was definitely a product placement opportunity that was pushed by production because we hadn't seen the BMWs in a while.
So we've come this far and we haven't like really talked specifically about the winning restaurant.
Yeah. Exactly like something we would do on the Top Chef.
Yeah, it really does. We were working our way up though. Like, we started with the failures and then we worked our way up to now we're at the top. Now, I mean, suffice it to say, we're going to have a lot to say about it going into next week because these are going to be the two cuisines that we're focusing on.
But this is our last shot to like take shots sight unseen. Like, is this, are we stoked on Country Captain, and is it Khan?
I can't wait for Ricardo Montalban to be the front of house for this.
Like, five hands went in the air when
It was definitely pronounced Khan because I remember thinking that when
actually
when
it's John Harrison. That's a
Sugar Khan
into darkness.
Shaka Khan. That would be a great restaurant as well.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I have more experience, obviously, with Southern cuisine than Haitian stuff. I mean, I think I would imagine just on concept, Kevin's is the more widespread and can incorporate more variety, but in an interesting way that it's not like just Southern cuisine, right? If it is indeed based in like Asian curry based influences, that at least provides a little bit more variability than just like we're gonna do Cracker Barrel and throw a bunch of chicken and biscuits at you. But I think Gregory has like the heart behind it, right? He has the emotions. I think Gail says at a certain point, like you could, or Padma said, you could feel the restaurant through him. And I wonder if that's going to prevail.
I'm sure Gail wants to feel the restaurant through him.
Ooh.
Something just happened to Antonio. He's
nothing
wearing
has happened.
I'm a survivor buff in a new way.
I got away without pitching my restaurant. So I'm saving my $1 million idea.
Well, I kind of figured you guys may want to sit on your ideas.
Exactly. But I've been sitting on my ideas my whole life.
Ideas are ass? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. I was surprised, and this is not to take away from the two winners. I was surprised that Melissa was not one of the two winners because I thought that was a super classy pitch. I thought the food looked incredible. I don't know what I could say negatively about like why that didn't win. Other than obviously the top two, I know Kevin is my boy and I love Kevin. I would have maybe been okay with the Gregory Melissa matchup. I'm also nervous for Kevin, obviously, being one of the two winners with the prophecy of Leanne. I still think Melissa maybe could have captured it. Modern Asian Californian, and there's Agnolotti in there or something. Like, yeah, she's really stepping up what I think I expected from this restaurant. And I thought very in line with what I would expect from her, but also something that I was excited to see. Kevin's opened a lot of restaurants, of course, and all of them are places that people that I know that have gone to say they're really good. And so he's done really well for himself in opening up restaurants. And I have no doubt that he has a good concept here and that he can follow through on it. But I'm surprised Sabrina did not make it through Melissa's restaurant. I just thought that was a really well performed pitch. And she seemed to have none of the fallings of some of the other things. Of course, she's in the top four, but I was surprised that didn't win.
Well, I believe there was a passing comment from the judges that said they didn't think her concept they didn't say it may not be fully thought out, which make of that what you will. But that seemed to be the one sticking point. Maybe they felt like the other concepts were, I don't know, much more like thought out from beginning to end. Whereas I do agree with Melissa. Like, I think, I mean, they said cooking Michelin level food this entire season. She might be like outright the best chef or cook this season. Bar none.
I think she's going to win.
You think so?
I would be so enthused with a Melissa win.
I think Melissa's going to win Top Chef.
Yeah.
I just jinxed it, but I think she's going to win.
This makes me want to rewatch Top Chef Austin, though, for sure.
It's so good.
I mean, it's good, but let's also remember she really wasn't in Top Chef Austin for a while.
I know, but she popped towards the end.
Right, but I wouldn't say, like, don't specifically rewatch it for Melissa. Rewatch it because the cast is awesome and it's a really great season.
No. But seeing Gregory and Melissa, who are constantly in the top, come from that season, then it's like, damn, how good is everyone else on that season, too?
Yeah. Josh, you had a really great comment about Gregory the other day.
I think that Gregory is one of the most, like, I'm trying to find the. I don't remember exactly how
he said he was very confident and self assured.
Yeah, he's like he's one of the most like self confident people that I have ever seen on television, and in a way that isn't like doesn't put you off in any way, doesn't come off as arrogant. This is just somebody who is very set within himself, and like the way that he talked through the pitch, there were no nerves. Everything was accounted for. He had an answer for everything. He felt really, really, he just came across as so calm. Truly the three C's embodied within Gregory, the cool, calm collective in full display. It was really impressive to me, and it crystallized for me this feeling that I have about Gregory, that every time Gregory talks, he just like, he talks from this perspective of everything. Like he just has this focus of clarity
about everything that he's doing that's really, really impressive to me. I think he's just very authentic. And I really got that this episode specifically. I just felt like the way that he delivered that pitch really impressed me. And I'm not surprised at all that he was one of the two winners.
Well, I mean, speaking to his personal experience, I wonder if we're going to the psychology of it, how much of that comes from his past, you know, being a recovering addict and someone who really spent the past decade turning his life around. You can imagine there's a lot of confidence and a lot of hard work that went for him to change his entire lifestyle from one thing to another. So it absolutely makes sense to me. And it's also like, I feel like he has the speak softly and carry a big stick mentality as well of like you mentioned, he is not going to be the biggest, most outlandish, extroverted personality in the room. But it's almost like because he is so self-assured, but also soft-spoken, you want to lean in and listen to what he's saying because he sort of commands that presence. So I'm so excited he's doing so well. I feel like we can ascribe some comments to his stuff like we did with Eric. Of they even talk about this in the feedback of, we'd be able to elevate Haitian cuisine here where not a lot of people have been able to see that. And I do wonder if that's another reason why he ended up winning as well. And I'll be very intrigued. I can imagine Gregory is a good leader. So I think if there is any sort of trepidation from the people on his team about how to prepare this food, I can imagine Gregory's going to prepare them well for it.
Plus, he snatched the hell out of his eyebrows going into this episode.
Hell yeah.
They were gone, baby. I was a little shaken at first. Yeah,
you
I
said
agree
that,
with you.
And I looked for it, and I guess I didn't notice it as prominent.
Oh my gosh, the man has very little eyebrow to speak of.
Well, that's true, but he does have some.
I think we need to compare a last episode and this episode, and you tell me if you notice anything.
Side by side, eye by eye, brow by brow.
I agree with you, Mike. But I think Kevin the same way. I think both of them and Melissa would be the same. I think all three of them would have very positive energy in the kitchen and restaurant.
I noticed that we're conspicuously leaving out one of the top four.
Well, because you can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to imagine that if Brian Mullarkey were to have won, that his choice, even though it seems like it's a layup that he would be the executive chef and he needs to be back there in the kitchen, maybe he's better off just like deputizing someone, giving them the marching orders, having them menu plan, and he's just out there front of house, just selling it. Because I just think that energy that he's got is probably best used in terms of the way that he uses it and not necessarily trying to guide a team through restaurant wars. That said, Restaurant Wars, we've talked about this on previous episodes, not always the most beloved Top Chef episode for viewers. I think there's a big segment of our viewing audience or of listening audience, but of the viewing audience of Top Chef in general, who don't like conflict as much on Top Chef. They want
it
to
makes
see
me
people
very
well.
Anxious. Yeah. I hate watching Restaurant Wars.
Yeah.
And I hate even more when they stretch into two episodes.
Not only do I love conflict, I hope they bring back Leanne's mom for Restaurant Wars.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding. No, I don't like the conflict, but I would have loved to see a Mullarkey Restaurant Wars just to see what happens. That I'm not going to get this time.
Well, if you're somebody who likes conflict, now you're going to see Mullarkey front of house next week. That's what the preview indicates. It looks like he's going to be front of house for Gregory.
Yeah. So the teams, spoiler alert, the teams for next week are Gregory, Leanne, Stephanie, and Mullarkey versus Kevin, Karen, Melissa, and Brian Voltaggio. And from a pure temperament perspective, I would say the latter on paper seems like at least the favorites to like
poor hold, Gregory
to like keep their composure. In
yeah,
the kitchen, you know?
I guess I'm going to give myself a week to properly mourn Gregory because I don't like his shot.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm guessing that they did a draft of their if they're the people running this concept. I'm guessing they did a draft of who they wanted in the kitchen.
So I mean, I guess good on Kevin for getting first pick and immediately picking Melissa. That's my first assumption.
Yeah, Gregory said to Kevin like after the challenge when they were walking back in the stew room or whatever, he was like, "I wanted you on my team for Restaurant Wars." But
yeah, that was so cute. I love them.
Yeah, let's play that. So that's okay. Let's assume Kevin gets first draft pick, picks Melissa. Gregory then picks
Stephanie. They've worked together well this season. They've won two challenges.
They both have very even keeled composures. They just worked together two episodes ago.
Yeah,
so I can imagine that. I would imagine Gregory picking Mullarkey because he feels like he'd be a good front of house as well. And so Leanne is sort of like left as the last pick just because they most recently saw her on the bottom. You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, Gregory, correct me if I'm wrong here. Was Gregory not EC as well for the season 12 Restaurant Wars when poor Carrie Ann ends up getting her dessert botched? So it's not like a death knell for him necessarily if his team does lose.
Yeah, he can just screw up Malarkey's dessert and be fine.
Well, and I don't want to talk about how overproduced the show can be, but if you've got a separate web series that you send an eliminated chef to, it's not always a terrible outcome for the show to send a really talented chef to that Last Chance Kitchen, knowing you can bring them back and wash your hands of it. And they've done it before. Multiple winners have come through Last Chance Kitchen. So I don't think they see it as a total negative if somebody really talented goes out in this spot like Kristen and works their way back in and wins. So if they're going to say the axe falls on Gregory and that means that we have a really awesome hammer to put through top the Last Chance Kitchen in the next few weeks, so be it. Like, I don't think that they really sweat it as much for whatever reason. I'm sure they'd rather have him on the show proper, but I don't, it's not nearly as concerning as it was maybe prior to when Last Chance Kitchen came in.
It sucks though, because then if he has to rise, then Nene has to fall, and Nene has been so much fun this season.
It was adorable. Very funny when the beginning of the episode, no Nene and Karen, and I don't remember, was it Melissa that said, so quiet in here now?
And poor Stephanie is like, I'm the only one of Padma's angels.
Yeah, I felt so bad for that. I was just
but they're back up to two for now. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Angels come back. They rise.
Do we think that in Restaurant War, and again, you didn't watch the previews, maybe it is the answer there, is will the chefs on, say, Gregory's team need to cook his dishes, or will Gregory be more like, here, let me work with you to understand like where your cooking strengths are and how can we twist it so that it fits the this concept? Is he going to dictate the menu, or is he going to kind of collaborate?
I mean, I would say that even if he doesn't take the helm, people would be like, I haven't cooked Haitian before. Gregory does. So like, give me guidance.
That, like the manner in which he makes that choice would be a decider, right? Like, right, I think exactly. Like, is this like Gregory takes the wheel, he's in charge, he menu plans and he carefully instructs everybody how to execute the menu. Or Kevin, you know, or is it like, well, so here's the concept and I want you guys to just like feel free to like work within the concept. And if that ends up delivering, like if that ends up like pulling out something inspirational and brilliant in the chefs, then that's going to be great. But if they end up just like floundering because they've no clear direction, then they're screwed. So I think that that's probably the whole point of Restaurant Wars is like, yeah, and why the leader is always in the hottest of hot seats. Because they are the one who make these calls, you know, they are the ones who set the pace, who set the tone. And so many of the problems that spill out from other members of the team can still be attributed, whether fairly or not, to the leader of the team. And this time with the restaurants being won by two of the chefs, right? Like the fact that we're going into Restaurant Wars with the country captain and Khan on the board. You got to imagine that there's raise your fist that there's just more invested in them as leaders, which is why I think that both Kevin and Gregory are in such dangerous positions.
Can we just call the other restaurant Country Captain Kirk, just to like have that opposition going
country
on?
Country Captain Kirk versus Khan. It's fantastic.
Yes,
that's good.
Such a good idea.
It's good.
Can we have Danny Trejo star in that movie, by the way?
Well, yeah, speaking of which, we should probably talk about the quick fire at this point.
I was trying to segue us back, Michael. I was trying my best.
I live like a 10-minute walk from Trejo's Cantina.
Oh,
I've gone past it several times. And I was going to, when I watched this episode, turns out they're closed. And I think they're going to close like pre-COVID. So unfortunately, I can't get it. The closest to me is Trejo's Tacos. Which is unfortunately like downtown, quite a drive. But I was all excited to do. I forgot there was a Trejo's Cantina near me. Unfortunately, there's.
It is funny because Danny Trejo says, and maybe he does this at his cantina, or did. The good thing about a taco is it's really versatile. You can vegan it, you can vegetarian it, you can bite into a cow if you want to. If you want to be creative, you can. And 90% of the people made fish tacos.
Maybe, was it because of California where they just that inspired by like, well, we're in California, might as well make a fish taco. I mean, good on Stephanie. I mean, I feel like a large reason why she ends up winning is because she noticed just that and was like, let me stand out for a good reason and make something different. And it ends up saving her ass in this episode.
Yeah, I love lamb. I thought of the California thing too. I just thought it was super boring that they all made fish tacos, and I was very disappointed.
I was as well. Taco Challenge, and everybody's making like salmon or tempura shrimp.
Well, I think it's because it's a protein that's easy to and quick to make too.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not a fish taco fan.
Me neither.
I think it's only put mayonnaise on it, so I can't eat them.
I love them.
So then Haley,
love them if I could eat them.
So Haley, of the many fish tacos, did any stick out to you in particular?
Let me just do a quick browser-oony.
That's what Gregory did.
Ooh, Melissa's five spice beer battered mahi taco sounds delicious. I love a battered fish taco.
Yeah. Battered anything, maybe not, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't really want a grilled fish taco. That's not really what I'm going for. And I do love shrimp, so the shrimp would be good.
What about Leanne's cheese crust tortilla?
Yeah, I want that.
Sure.
Fish and cheese. Classic combo. Yeah. The machete was fun. I mean, clearly, yeah. We talked about how Brian Voltaggio is managing to do like delicate knife work with it, but I don't think it was a real hindrance. We didn't see that the machete caused people to treat this challenge really differently or hindered anybody in such a way that they ended up on the bottom because of it. Nobody cut their arms off or fell on it or anything. You bring a machete, nobody like turned on their fellow chefs. Like you did, there were no like real downsides to the, it was just cool to watch and fun to see. And it was like a neat little hook with Danny Trejo there, but it was not anything that I thought had any like tangible impact on the challenge at all. Right.
He just had a book come out, Danny Trejo's book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's about tacos. So
that's a surprise.
It seemed like this was like even like if you look at like shows like Cutthroat Kitchen, where you're bidding to sabotage your fellow contestants. This seems like something that wouldn't have even been used in that. It didn't seem like it was really was a sabotage item as much as it was just a small barrier that people overcame very quickly.
Right. That's the thing, is that I think on paper, I probably would have liked this challenge less, because my least favorite Top Chef challengers are the ones that are like, you have to cook with one hand behind your back, or you can only use forks or something like that, because that feels less like Top Chef and more like we're just going to throw stuff in your path. Whereas like we're going to let you find the palate to become creative. But like Antonio said, it really didn't seem to be that much of a problem. If anything, some of these chefs seemed invigorated by the idea of using this big ass knife to do things. Leanne in particular, Melissa said she always wanted a machete, so it brought out some fun elements in that perspective. And as long as nobody got particularly hurt, it was rather innocuous.
There was a lot of running around with machetes. That did disturb me.
Yeah, same. It was dangerous. Kevin did the thing where you use store-bought tortillas instead of making them. It didn't seem to matter. Like, this was just a very like low stakes quick fire. And it didn't seem like anybody really struggled with it, except for they all struggled with. And I think you're right, Emily. I think it was probably just like, for the same reason you see a lot of ceviches and you see a lot of just things like that, tartars in quick fires. Like prep is just the number one thing there. It's quick and easy to get that going. But I like props to Steph, like you said, Mike, you're just zigging when everyone else zagged, and it actually worked. So that was nice to see. I want to talk about something else, unless anyone has anything else in the quick fire.
Nope.
All right. Hearing none. The replacement level rich guy said 90% of restaurants fail. The 10% that succeed have a point of view. Emily, do you think that that is a good maxim, that only the 10% that succeed are only succeed because they have a point of view?
Well, a point of view, it goes hand in hand with taste and quality, right? So like, I mean, you could probably, I think that's a fair assessment, to be honest, because you don't want to go to a restaurant where you don't understand what's going on. That usually means the food's not very good either.
Yeah. I don't think he's saying that having a point of view isn't, it's necessary, but not sufficient. So it's like people, the ones will fail that don't have the point of view. It's just the 10% that do succeed definitely do have the point of view.
Totally. Yeah.
And it sounds like what you're saying, and I agree, is that the point of view is indicative of like having success in those other areas.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's representative of like that you have an entire concept, as opposed to like, I want to cook this and then I'll sort of worry about the idea later on.
It's totally. Like point of view is the outcome. It's not the input. It's like once you do everything correctly, guess what? That point of view is clearly communicated, but you have to do a bunch of small kind of iterative steps to get to that point
of view. Correct. You guys summed it up much better than I can.
I hadn't thought about it that way until you said it. So yeah. That's why I brought it up. It yeah. it was it seemed like one of those like easy things to say, but I was not able to unpack why that may or may not be true. And it sounds like it is the 10% that succeed do have a point of view, but it isn't that they succeed because they have a point of
right.
view, right? So but I don't know. I think that the four that did really well in the challenge did have a point of view. I'm not sure that that's going to speak to, because this is a restaurant war situation, their ability to deliver on that point of view. So I think yet again, proving that what you're saying behind the maxim, Emily, is not that the point of view is necessary to the success. It's just part of it. So that's interesting. Leanne had a point of view. I thought her point of view was maybe not well executed on, but it seemed like this is a restaurant she wanted to deliver on. I was a little surprised that it just didn't go well. Gail said the concept was too basic. So yeah. maybe it's not just that you have a point of view, but that there has to be something more to it for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if her dishes had been stronger, they might've felt that the point of view was stronger. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I
right.
think that it, like I said, it goes hand in hand. So the fact that she had underseasoned pork, that there were a lot of add-ons to the pork dish that just sort of masked everything rather than complementing one another, I think was really tough. And also, I don't even understand how the mahi-mahi bites work.
Yeah, what was
they're
that?
Like,
yeah,
they're like salted and like
cured egg yolk. Yeah, I was really confused as to the general construction of how that was put together.
Especially because you can imagine, like, if it's cured in something, that would you would hope that would take longer than like a 24-hour period or something, right? Maybe that was an issue, is that she tried to make more of a long-term dish in terms of prep over the course of a short period, and it just didn't end up necessarily working out. I thought there was a really interesting moment with Leanne too, when they came back into the stew room, where she's like, "I should have just cooked the home style family cooking that I usually do." It's like, yeah, why didn't you do that then?
Yeah, yeah. And it also just looked kind of clunky on the plate, too. It almost looked like an agadashi tofu thrown like with herbs over it. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the big chunks. I was like, sort of, you know, had that. That's not a bite. That's multiple bites. Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, like we said, you're dealing with putting together a concept and building dishes in a 24 to 48 hour period. There are going to be some hits. There are going to be some misses, but it's unfortunate because, you know, I think Hawaiian cuisine is a pretty strong concept. So I'm a little surprised that she, yeah, of course, didn't cook sort of the home style that she should have. Right.
Right.
Thanks.
I concur.
I think so. I think so too.
Well, I guess.
Kurt.
Well, I was going to say, I guess speaking of people who were, I guess, the opposite of Leanne, cooking out of their comfort zone, we should talk about pretty interesting LCK going on here with two people just blindly attempting to cook Italian food for Tom Colicchio.
That was fun.
Which is my restaurant concept, by the way.
I was going to ask if it was.
People blindly cooking Italian food for Tom Colicchio. Yeah. That's what I wanted
literally
to
blindfolded.
Do. Yep, that's what I want to do. Yeah, it did not. It didn't go. It went okay, I guess. You get maybe butter in the place of cream, which shouldn't have been there to begin with.
Yeah, I think Tom provided a low bar with being like, "I know you both don't cook Italian food, so we're going, like, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt when it comes to like doing certain things, like the use of rhubarb, for instance, which is not necessarily the most Italian vegetable."
It's a relatively level playing field then, right? Like, yeah. If this is both something that's outside of their comfort zone, then it's really like, you know, let's just see what you guys do.
It's not like Joey Mustache coming in against Nene or anything.
Right.
It was definitely, though, like the Tom's walkthrough of their various dishes. It seemed like
he was skeptical.
It seemed like he was skeptical. It seemed like he was much more skeptical of Eric's in terms of
the cream.
I like that he was asking a lot of very leading questions. And I don't know if you're in the moment then, if you're realizing that I need to be picking up on what's being like. There's a reflection from Nene after Tom sauce pie. I love that Shio had like the answers for, like, she was prepping the fish in this very specific way. And I'm wondering if that's what kind of put her potentially over the top, was that Tom's like, you know what, I'm stealing that way of that method of fish prep from you, because I think that was genius.
Yeah. Emily, can you talk about that? Because literally the only thing I heard was gelatinous, and I sort of lost the methodology as to what she was doing there.
I don't really know what she did either.
It was like partially. It was like partially.
Yeah, it seemed like that she was filleting the fish, but she didn't fillet it all the way.
Yeah.
So that when she was cooking it, it was still on the bone. So you're still like a broth, right? So you're still getting all of the flavor from the bone, but then you don't have to like. In eating, you don't have to worry about it. You can just kind of slice it off and serve that. And then you still have all the flavor of a whole roasted fish.
Yeah.
Smart.
It is smart.
I was sad to see Eric go, but I love Nini so much. So I'm thrilled to see her continue.
She's amazing.
And the declarative of, I'm an Italian now.
No, I think my favorite was like move over, Nini leaks. There's it was so good to the point where when you make the producer crack up and that moment makes the edit, like, you know, you're kicking ass. And Nini has just been like a ball of light this season.
You know that the world is upside down right now when not only am I like very into LCK all of a sudden, but also like I want Nini to win LCK and then win the whole thing. Because I just love Nini so much.
She's so cute. I loved her outfit. I love her like bag of knives and tools because it
was like
she's gonna go gardening.
It was a gardening kit. Like
it was amazing.
Eric comes in with his roll of knives under his arm. She's like, my bag, my bag of knives.
Yeah,
she's
maybe so great. I'll go snip some flowers.
She's
after.
So great. Like, she's incredible.
We're gonna learn something from Nini, aren't we, Josh?
Yes. Uncle Tonio, Emily, and I don't know if anybody else has hopped on this train, but we're gonna be taking a dumpling making class virtually with Nini later this month. So we'll report back on how that goes. I'm excited. I think really it's gonna excited. Be fun.
Dead air. I mean, I honestly heard we're taking a dumpling class, and I just my mind just sort of stopped there as the 5-year-old brain. That
with
I
Nini, Mike, you. With Nini, virtually. that's the important part. Yeah, that's my restaurant concept. This speaking of taking that class with Nini, Nini is doing that, of course. Because we are the times that we're in, chefs out there and restaurants out there do what they need to do or are doing new creative things to get by. And we always like to highlight stuff on this podcast that we're supporting locally or that you can do if it's in your area to support. I know you guys, Josh and Emily, supported Sylvia's restaurant in New York this week and had some interactions with her. What do you want to say about that?
Yes. Lorena, is that how it's pronounced?
Lisa Rinna, I think is what
Lisa. Move over, Lisa. So there's a new one for Bravo.
Yeah, she has Lorena has her restaurant in Brooklyn, Italian restaurant, and she's got a lot of you guys put this on our radar that she was selling a lot of pantry goods and
she's doing some cool stuff over there.
She's doing really cool stuff, and so we put in an order and got a lot of good olive oil, some flour. We ended up with we didn't order any pasta from her, and she just threw in like this.
Well, we talked to her.
Yeah, because there was something that we had ordered that wasn't available, and so she called to see if the replacement was okay. And we were like, "We're big fans. Come onto our podcast." No, she's like, "Oh yeah, sure, totally." And I was like, "Maybe like you've got
no." She's right awesome. I had the privilege of working an event at BravoCon where Brooke, Joe Flam, and Kelsey all made like specific meals, and Sylvia was one of Brooke's sous chefs.
Cool.
So I had the opportunity to talk with her for a little while, and she is just an awesome, wonderful. awesome person.
She was wonderful. She made this. She like threw in this hand cut pasta that was just unbelievable. It was
and
like
a piece of ramp focaccia.
A piece of ramp focaccia that was ridiculous. Yeah. It's like the best garlic bread I've ever bitten into.
Unreal.
It was really, really good. And the pasta was like, it was kind of like a ridged spaghetti. I don't know like how to describe it better than that.
It was like a linguine with a little bit of like texture.
The ruffles of the pasta world.
It was like the ruffles of the pasta world. Ruffles have ridges. It was really great. It was amazing. And we tossed it with some bolognese that Emily made this week. It was amazing. It was really, really, really great. So we'll post the link to her restaurant in the show notes. If you're in the New York area, if you're looking for like, interesting flowers, good beverages too, lots of cheeses, pasta,
Calabrian
all of that.
Chilies.
Yeah. Anchovies. Lots of really great stuff and sauces that are already made. This is a strong, strong recommendation. And obviously you are supporting somebody, within the Top Chef family. So, A++++++. We had a very, very good experience this week.
I like how a lot of restaurants are shifting to also being able to provide pantry staples, or even things you wouldn't necessarily consider staples. Like almost, there's several in the area here that have kind of said, well, here's a meal kit for your family that you can prepare at home. There's one near me that I'm thinking about picking up, where it's like it makes basically it's 9 homemade Pop-Tarts, but it's like it gives you all the components to make these pastries, and they're Pop-Tartish. Popovers. I don't know what the genericized term would be. Toaster pastry.
There you go.
But there you go. So yeah, I just love that, you know, restaurants are getting innovative in terms of how they end up serving their clientele during this time.
Totally. Totally.
I got a request to talk about a restaurant from Kristen. She emailed me at bachelorwrapup@gmail.com, which you absolutely can do.
Yes.
About Top Chef. It's not, I'm just not setting up another Gmail of Top Chef
topchefwrapup@gmail.com.
So you can just email me at bachelorwrapup@gmail.com. She said Teeny Thai in San Jose is incredible. The food is so flavorful and every dish is packed with flavor. We love the Pad See You, Pad Ki Mao, and Tom Yum Pak. The staff and owners are so kind. Back in the day when we could actually eat the restaurant, the food came out so fast, and there was an awesome accordion player who would come to each table and serenade the guests.
Oh, Weird Al Yankovic?
Amazing.
Oh, man. We've been ordering takeout once a week from this restaurant, and they're so cautious and have devised a system of pickup that is safe but not super hectic. Last week, we ordered takeout. When we went to pick it up, they gave us a complimentary roll of toilet paper and hand sanitizer.
Wow. That's gold. That's amazing. Gold.
Yeah.
And the website is TEENEETHAISANJOSE.com. Josh, amazing. I'll send it to you so you can put the link in.
Sure.
So that's from Kristen. She also said, can you all promote next season of Top Chef to be in Philadelphia? It is my hometown and so many great restaurants.
Have they done we've been pounding that drum for years.
Prior Top Chef owned restaurants, Zahav, which has 1 million James Beard Awards, lots of history, culture, and maniacs who will boo people if their food sucks.
I mean, the answer to that is talk to your government about offering tax credits to magical elves, because that dictates a large reason as to where they go.
Yep. And shout out to Philly restaurant Fiore Fine Foods. Check out their Instagram. They are making gelato right now, and they did some hand-delivered soups. They're doing a lot of awesome stuff. Really, the gelato looks absolutely incredible. Fiore Fine Foods, F-I-O-R-E.
And shout out to my friend Nick Fiore.
Who used to live in Philly.
He has the eye patch.
Wait, I thought he was dead.
No.
He has the eye patch.
No.
Well, you know, if we do a Philly season, we have the chance to get Eddie on. We have the chance to get potentially a return of
Ben
Nicholas
Carroll.
Elmy. Nicholas Elmy.
Yeah. I once got.
You can do the one-on-one on that, Kurt.
Say that again, Emily.
I once got booed out of a Phillies game because they were playing the Red Sox.
Oh, I thought you said you once got food out of a Phillies game.
No, and we got yelled at quite a bit, as one would expect, being a Red Sox fan and being in Philly. And we got called chowder heads, and we turned around and we said, what's so cool about Philly? You guys don't even have anything about you here. And everyone flipped out and goes,
how old were you?
Went, Rocky, are you kidding me? And then it quieted down and someone goes, I actually think The Sixth Sense was filmed here.
Wow.
Well,
M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end.
And that person was M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah. Was at the game like, so you know, it was filmed in this location.
My tactic is that when I'm traveling for baseball games and the other team's jersey is red, I have a special Canada Day Blue Jays jersey that is red.
Nice.
So I will wear that to games, and usually people won't give me a second look. And then once they do, they go, wait, that's a Blue Jays jersey. That actually famously happened to me in Cincinnati, Antonio.
Everyone's so nice here.
And then usually people aren't mad because I'm Canadian, and people are like, oh, Canadian, like how cute.
Mm-hmm. It's like,
is it so much warmer here than at home?
Yeah. And to be fair, you also said, what does Cincinnati have? So that also helped.
And they said,
I think Rainier is filmed here.
Masshole Emily Fox was a great character. You don't really bust that side out anymore. But
can that be the other mascot of Pizza Addy? Is Masshole Emily Fox?
Back
that's my
in the day.
Restaurant concept.
Masshole.
I do miss
Well, that's close to Antonio's concept.
It's all just cheap cuts. Masshole.
Wow.
That was mostly, it was actually a grosser joke than that, but it didn't really land.
Okay. I do miss getting food out of a stadium. Baseball stadium food? Oh, love
well,
it.
Well, remember actually in Top Chef Boston, there was a challenge about that where they cooked for Fenway and that one guy got eliminated or somebody got eliminated because they had a big baseball-sized piece of arancini. And it was just like, and it, the guy who had the Gorbachev, the poor wine stain.
Thanks, Mike. Anyway. It's true. It's true.
See, Antonio, I'm not ready to talk about the Americans on a regular basis. It took me a while to get the joke.
Wow. Do we have anyone else we need to plug?
I want to plug, Emily, your Instagram. When you said that when we were talking about Masshole Emily, I thought that could have been one of your looks of the day.
Yeah.
I can't wait for backwards cap, open Red Sox jersey, jeans, and Convies.
Fever pitch.
I purposely stayed away from that because I'm like, who in my real life will be offended by this?
Oh, there are people who would be very offended. Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing? What's that? Not a good Boston
they sound
accent.
Like that, too.
Yeah.
Sorry. Microprocessors.
What are you doing? It's me from Boston.
Well, can I tell you my real restaurant idea was a play on my grandmother who had a really thick Boston accent and she didn't call dinner. She called it supper. So I was like, my restaurant concept would probably be supper, which she said supper.
But that's an East Coast Canadian thing too. I got made fun of all the time for calling, saying like, "Let's go to dinner," and they'd be like, "What are you talking about?"
From what I've seen from the Canadians I interacted with, though, with Haley, supper also doesn't necessarily mean dinner. Sometimes supper refers to lunch.
Yeah, that's a Newfoundland thing. That's a very, very deep East Coast thing.
Where I grew up, it was breakfast, lunch, dinner. Except on Sundays, it was breakfast, dinner, supper.
Yeah. So. Wait, what?
Lunch was dinner?
On Sundays, your second meal of the day, which took place around noon, was dinner.
I've heard that.
But then your nighttime or evening meal was supper. But it was only on Sundays. Yeah. I'm just, it's a cultural thing. You want...
Mike's so upset.
I'm so confused. Why would you change the name? Like, I understand, like, replacing the name, but you're taking the name of one meal and attributing it to another meal. It'd be like, hey, for this one day, I'm changing around my last and middle names.
Mike, breakfast for dinner is amazing, and how dare you?
I'm having supper for dinner.
I mean, I think my my religious cards are showing, and that the Catholic faith just has really confused me more confoundingly so.
And what did you guys make for supper this week? Supper. What'd you make for supper this week?
So much bolognese. And then we made a crazy lasagna last night.
Yeah. Ooh. Over bolognese. Yeah. It's still on my Instagram right now if you guys want to go take a gander.
Yeah, probably not at the time that people are listening to this.
I'll take a goose.
Okay.
Fair. You can screenshot it.
Oh, that's a good restaurant. The Goose and the Gander.
Put it. Emily, have you made any highlights? You should make some highlights of your dinners and also your outfits.
I will.
The outfit she has the highlights on.
And then someone should make a Twitter thread of Emily Fox's dishes as her outfits and then just compare them side by side.
That's a really good idea, actually.
That is a good idea.
I had
Go ahead. Yeah. I was gonna say, after a while, I hear you start looking like your meals. But
I'm starting looking like mine.
I'm starting to look like Emily's meals.
I had a great conversation with a friend the other day who was like, "It's not so much about the fashion; it's more about the small stories you tell."
And
yes. That's very obviously, yes. Thanks, Owen. No, come for the stories, stay for the food stories.
Yeah, bolognese on fleek this week.
Yeah, no, I made bolognese. I turned that into some lasagna. We also made some meatballs that froze, but I ate one before we did it. And boy, am I looking forward to thawing those probably next week. What else did we make?
That's like the last 48 hours, all I've eaten is some variation of bolognese. So I can't think, I don't have memories before bolognese anymore. And I'm not complaining. It's been great. It's been great.
I'm so hungry right now.
I want more bolognese. Yeah.
But now I'm just imagining like, all right, Josh, we're going to have a nice field green salad. You're like, all I taste is bolognese. Yeah. That's the only taste buds now are bolognese.
The ground beef and pork and tomato and carrots.
We had so many carrots.
Yeah.
Those all went into the bolognese.
That's effectively it. I'm sure that there was more, but those are the headlines.
I mean, it's like a pork scallopini.
Oh, yeah. That was
really
good.
That was
really
good.
I love scallopini.
That was pretty good.
That's the first time I've ever made it, too, because we had the right cut.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
Very lemony.
Very
Snicket.
Very lemony.
Oh my god. Yeah, anyway, really what else lemony. Did you guys make this week? Who wants to
I had my meal, I had my meal kit delivered.
Which nice. What
there was like sweet potatoes and green beans and a maple chicken that was really good. Like you had nice. Like you actually had to kind of coat the chicken in cream cheese and put a panko breadcrumb crust on top of that, and you baked it in the oven.
Oh wow.
There's like a one pot chili, which was a couple meals, which is good. And of course the ever present bibimbap of HelloFresh.
Mm-hmm.
And you did your weekly Kogi truck.
Oh yeah, yeah. I did that last night. I got and you, Kogi
you,
dog.
You had reached out to us sliders or dog, and I don't know that you got a ton of feedback on it.
I got zero feedback.
But were you unintentionally like pitching your restaurant concept to us and seeing if it would work of like yeah. sliders or dogs?
Yeah, as always, I vote hot dogs, Kurt. So you made the right choice.
Okay, I love like spicy pork is my go-to because it's my go-to kind of Korean protein. So this time I got their spicy pork quesadilla. I was like, well, but I like to always get a second entree, you know, for supper because I just had dinner. I was torn between the Kogi sliders and the Kogi dog, and I got the dog, and it was really, 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 really good. I liked it actually better than the quesadilla. And then I got like a $7 pizza from Little Caesars this week because I want something that lasts a couple meals.
A hot and ready?
No.
Deep dish?
Nope. It was their Parmesan crust basil pepperoni.
Oh,
basil. Go to their pizza portal and pick it up contactless.
Ooh, pizza.
Pizza
when,
portal.
When we get Little Caesars, there. Ethan asks them to like take their like cheese that they put on the crazy bread and like put it all over the pizza and all over the crust.
Yeah, it's been one of my quarantine go-tos is like get a large pizza early in the week and just spread it out across several meals.
Yeah, we got Pizza Hut last weekend and we made it last three meals. It was fantastic.
So long.
I love Pizza Hut.
That just makes me feel so nostalgic.
Honestly, like we've been trying like so hard to exclusively get from like local restaurants and not get chains, but we looked at each other last week and we're like, Pizza Hut.
Kayla, you got to take care of yourself. You know, like you have to get Pizza Hut.
Makes me miss Papa Gino's.
Oh, that's
sorry. Yeah. Just going back to the
Fox
moment.
Coming back out.
I know. They filed chapter 11, I think. That's the end.
RIP Papa Jeans.
Oh, the best.
So, Haley, you had Pizza Hut. Did you cook anything cool this week?
Actually, we cooked quite a bit of cool things. We did a grocery run this week. So, we had some options. We made chicken shawarma this week, which was really delicious. We made our own garlic sauce, and our house was very garlicky smelling for days.
Mm-hmm.
We made pulled pork on Thursday. So just a nice slow cooker pulled pork. And then we had that on sandwiches for dinner that night. I made nachos with it yesterday. And I think Ethan is going to make pulled pork grilled cheese for lunch so we can finish that up.
Pulled pork grilled cheese. Wow.
I made some classic chocolate chip cookies this week, and I made that into an ice cream sandwich, which was delicious.
Oh yeah, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Nice.
And I just remember there's a place near me, they're bringing back a special, the short rib grilled cheese.
Oh.
That might have to be my dinner.
Oof.
Several nights this week.
Make it stretch. We didn't really make anything really remarkable this week. I guess the one thing is I love salads, and we finally have like rediscovered beets in salads.
I love beets in salads.
What? Why? What's that look, Haley?
Nothing. Just
no, like Mike, we love that journey for you. Keep going.
Yeah. We love that you love salads.
That salad journey. Well, you there's so many things you salad. Can put. I mean, there's so many of things course. You can put in there.
Yeah, it's, of course.
I love a salad too, Mike.
I love beets and salads also, Mike. So with some sunflower seeds.
Yeah, that's it. I rediscovered that. It's a fun little thing to throw in there that I have it in sometime. That's it. I'm gonna refrain from further judgment, I suppose, and the things that I like.
I'm not judging. I'm just like sometimes when people come to me and be like, I'm very passionate about salad, I go, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Solid.
I'm not laughing at your love of salads, Mike. I'm laughing at how much the haters are judging you for this.
Apparently.
I'm mostly
laughing at Mike's like unmitigated gall and reaction to the reaction.
Mike is upset.
Mike looks upset. He looks right very now. Hurt.
He's like shell shocked.
I'm just confused. I'm more confused now than when Kurt said apparently dinner is lunch during one seventh of the week.
Supper.
It's actually just a pretty innocent opinion of like, I like salads. It's like,
yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah,
you now didn't we're going to go to all the stock photos of Mike eating salad so happily.
Mike, I had a great taco salad this week that we made. Salad.
He's like, I love Caesar salads, but they're all like, it's just like so unhealthy.
Do you prefer the large Caesar or the little Caesar? Sorry. Mike, I support you in your love of salads.
Thank you, Antonio.
Yeah. I love salads as well.
I'm staying out of it because... Because
you don't love salads?
Do you I love salads. I just don't want to get in the middle of the conflict between my wife and my lost wife.
I would like to take a poll as a podcast. Do we prefer like a leafy salad or what they call a bound salad?
You want this to be an official tabulator poll? I can make that.
I mean, I just... So let's talk about the bound salads. There's macaroni salad. There's potato salad. There's ham salad. There's broccoli salad. What am I missing?
Chicken salad, egg salad, tuna salad.
Okay, I'm gonna separate the broccoli salad out from that because that's another vegetable.
Love broccoli salad. I am uncomfortable with most of the other salads you listed.
Exactly. But isn't broccoli salad a bound salad? Doesn't it have like the Emily? I'm assuming you're out on all of these. Because aren't they all bound by mayo?
Yes. They're all bound by mayo, which is
not
the eggs.
Not any of this. Very upset by it.
That's like having a menu separated by color. Like it's, I don't look at the
bound salad restaurant's going to leave Emily with the schnitz. So I think we're tapping out on the bound salad.
Yeah.
Unbound.
Is coleslaw a bound salad?
That's a good question. I never thought of that.
Is coleslaw a salad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I think it's like a salad.
Is that a bound salad?
Yeah. I think it's a bound salad.
Yeah.
I've never heard the term bound salad.
Yeah, Haley, me neither.
Jinx, oh my God, we're so cute. You owe me a soda.
Is it true? Did I make that up?
Yeah,
I'm not making that up, right?
I don't know. It makes sense.
It's not something I've.
But to answer your question, leafy salad, in my opinion. Yeah, I think from an inventiveness perspective, there's so many other things you can throw in there as opposed to like just the palette of the bound salad is there's only so many things you can really put in there.
The bound salad is a better band name for sure.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
I consider it gloopy salads.
Ooh, less of a good band name.
I don't know. I don't think of a broccoli salad. Maybe it's just the ones I'm envisioning. I just don't envision that.
Because it's like a vegetable base rather than a pasta base or a carb base salad
as like being slathered in the yo. Like that's not really happening to the broccoli salud.
Sure it is. Isn't it?
Not the ones I've seen.
I haven't seen a mayo base.
I have a broccoli salad that is mayo.
I will toss out the egg salad, potato salad, and what's the third icky one?
Tuna salad.
Pasta, egg, and potato. Throw those out.
I like a mac salad, and I am gaining comfort with potato salad. But please never sign me up for a chicken salad.
Where do we stand on ambrosia salad?
I don't even know what that is.
I am into it because it's marshmallows and coconut and like mayo.
It's a super sweet, like weird sort of, I don't know, like weird little party thing.
We had a cousin
that would bring it to every family function and God, I would eat it.
It's my dragon. That's what it is.
I don't know what it is. I have no idea what it is.
It's like marshmallow. It's like a marshmallow.
It's like marshmallow and fruit and coconut.
Apples and grapes are typically in there.
Oh, I prefer the grapes.
That sounds, well, without the marshmallow, you're getting like the Waldorf salad.
It's very similar to a Waldorf salad, actually, yeah.
Uncle Tonio, did you make any bound salads this week?
Not in the kitchen. No, I did not.
Yabba dabba do.
No bound salads.
You cook anything, Lenny?
No,
cool.
Not really. I don't. It's been a lazy ass week. I got to tell you, a lot of leftovers, a lot of stuff that was in the freezer, and just a lot of prepared foods. Maybe on the weekend here, we'll get into something. I've just been very lazy.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm at the play a lot of Animal Crossing and do puzzles stage of the quarantine. And, you know, puzzles are so popular that I wouldn't want to take away from that time for sure.
Wow. Yeah, puzzles are really the salad of quarantine activities, according to Emily.
And yes. They're the bound salad.
Yeah. Throw some glue in there at the end.
Oh, put some mayo on that puzzle.
I hope everyone's hanging in together. Yeah. I hope everyone's hanging in there. I don't know if anyone else felt this. Yesterday felt like one of like the dreariest days of quarantine for me. Like, I know time doesn't really exist anymore and days aren't real anymore and they're a social construct, but yesterday felt like uniquely blah. And I just wonder if that was just me or if there was something in the air, because I saw a few people on Twitter who seemingly were having blah days. We're really far into this thing, but like not that far into this thing too, probably. So I just hope everyone's hanging in. I hope the Top Chef podcast is giving people some comfort. I know that like immediately these 2 hours that you that all of us have been on here for this morning, all better than everything that happened yesterday. So I hope
mean, we had a good end of the day.
We had a good end of the night, but like it, we hey.
Oh, I'm comfy.
Yikes.
Very comfy.
But this is pretty comfortable. But I hope that this is good for other people too. I just hope that everyone's getting to unplug a little bit and
Unplug is the right word there. Yeah. I deleted the Twitter app from my phone just because
smart man. Too much
news right now. And I know I need to keep my head down and stay safe, and I know that's what everybody needs to do. I don't seeing news of people not doing that or fighting back against it or protesting, like the idea that they might have to not go to a chain restaurant and treat someone like their slave for 5 minutes.
I'm
you can still get takeout from Applebee's, my friends.
Yeah. You don't get to order somebody around. You don't get your refill taken
restaurant
anyway.
Well, just get your dumb little gross kid to refill your pop. Like, it's super easy.
You don't have to. I mean, I'm on your team. I'm just super triggered by a lot of what's going on.
I totally understand.
Deleted
stupid and upsetting.
I need
to mute a lot more words. I have an issue in which I feel like I'm gonna miss out on something information if I don't mute words, or if I mute words. But like, honestly, I'm at a point where it's like, what am I missing? Just mute everything. I just want the glory is bullshit in my feed right now. That's all I want. That's why I've been loving Instagram right now, because most of it's like, chill. Like, oh, look at these
Haley, for the $50,000 patrons, Haley is doing some great Vogue posing right now.
Yeah, Haley, your voguing is really
well.
Good.
That being said, I hope that to Josh's point, we serve as this. We're about to enter a very interesting week next week. Let's see what Restaurant Wars provides. This season has been like a hoot and a half with all the stuff that's been going. Even like a super sad boot like Eric has still provided like a lot of really interesting stuff to get into. So I can't wait to keep going. I hope people keep going along with the ride for us. As
Kirk Clark, who's going home next week? Give us the call.
It's going.
Is it
going to
be as easy as it's a binary? It's Kevin or Gregory?
No, it's going to be malarkey.
Wow.
It's going to be we couldn't wrangle him. He couldn't play
front of house disaster.
Yeah.
Oh, then I'll. That's going to be hard to watch. Oh God.
Sorry.
I just got so nervous. I just got so anxious.
You're going to be fine. Okay. It's going to be okay.
All right.
Okay. It'll be okay.
All right. I have nothing further to add, Your Honor.
Okay.
Where can people follow you on Twitter, Joshua?
Oh, I guess I should add that. I'm at Rand Howard on Twitter and Instagram.
And what kind of content can people expect from you?
Sometimes cat videos, sometimes videos of Emily cutting my hair, sometimes links to the podcasts that we do over at Post Show Recaps, the scripted wing of the Rob Has a Podcast empire, and sometimes just like guttural cries into the abyss known as the internet.
I did cut Ethan's hair this week and it was successful.
Wow.
Nice. Congrats.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, Emily, where can people find you on the internet?
I am at Emilet, like an omelet with an E, on both Instagram and Twitter. And I've been posting my outfit of the day on weekdays and a pithy little story to go with it. And I've been making lots of food, continue to do so, continue to be happy to answer people's questions. Should you have any baking or cooking thoughts that need to be elaborated on? I've talked about sourdough more in the last few weeks than I ever expected to in my entire life. Everyone's going to bake their first, sourdough loaf, and it's going to be dense. So
yeah,
buckle up.
it's going to keep happening.
As Lili Sobieski once said, buckle up.
Yeah.
It's a glass out reference.
So, yeah.
Kurt got it.
Favorite movie. Underreported.
Three people buckle up. Cracking up right now.
Yes.
Uncle anyway. Tony, I saw that finger wag. What were you doing?
Oh, I well, follow me at AC Mazzaro with two Z's and one R on Twitter and Instagram. I'm probably not going to respond on Twitter for a little while, but I do check it on the desktop when I'm working or when I'm not working, when I have access. No, Emily, I looked up Hecker's Flower because mm-hmm. you spoke of it last week. It is, I believe, limited to only two geographic areas of the country, Northern Illinois, Southern Wisconsin, and the New York, New Jersey tri-state area. Mm-hmm. So it is not a nationally reputed product, but I have heard from those who have used it that it is spectacular. So if you can get your hands on some Hecker's,
yeah,
do it.
Yes.
Have you continued to use it?
I have. I'm probably going to make another sourdough batch or focaccia batch probably tomorrow. So I will use the Hecker's again because that's quickly shot up to be my number one flour in the pantry right now.
Hell
and
yeah.
I still have more of it than I have anything else. So like I'm going to keep working with it. But yeah, airy texture, really beautiful and fluffy. So I'm excited to keep up with that.
Speaking of beautiful and fluffy, how about your social medias, Kurt Clark?
I was wondering if you were going to toss that to Mike or me.
Yeah.
Could have gone either way, honestly.
I am at Kurt Clark with two C's on most of your major and minor platforms where I would like to be found. Instagram, usually you can find out what I'm eating. On Untapped, you can usually find out what I'm drinking. And I've been doing more streaming on Twitch, where I'm also at Kurt Clark.
What are you streaming? What are you twitching?
Right now, I'd started Red Dead Redemption 2 like 7 times and made it, I think, each time 3 hours in and just stopped.
That's where I stopped.
And then it's like, I want to play it, but I don't remember like the controls. So I have to start over again, which is intimidating. But no, I've now, I think, passed that point of no return where I'm trying to play it daily.
That's your Animal Crossing.
That's the thing, is that's my Animal Crossing. That, and I also was... I've been doing more Zoom gaming where I've hosted a Jackbox game this week of several people. And last night I'd hosted a Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes game, which is the opposite of soothing. Oh, where
that's more contentious than Restaurant Wars sometimes.
Yeah, where it's everybody has like I'm the only person who can see the virtual bomb I need to defuse, and everybody else has the instruction manual. And I'm like, OK, there's 6 wires. Is there a yellow one? Yes. Are there, but there's more than 3. No, there's just one. It's a lot of fun. I did that with a group of like 5 people trying to guide me through how to defuse a bomb last night. And it was amazeballs. Enjoyed it a lot.
I have a pitch for you, Kurt. Escape Zoom. See if you can make it work.
Wow.
Oh, it's happening already.
He's been piloting it, right?
Yeah. I've got a bunch of home-based escape rooms that I'm trying to figure out how to do it over Zoom, but I know lots of escape rooms are doing virtual rooms during the shutdown where it's either they'll go into Discord and kind of have an audio theater of the mind type of escape room. And there's others that they'll actually have like a live cam strapped on an avatar, a person in the actual escape room facility, and you guide them through what you need them to do.
Cam from Whodunit?
Yes, Cam.
Yes.
That's your buddy.
Yeah, so lots of gaming options I'm exploring in this time of shutdown.
Cool, man. Wow.
Michael.
Hi. At a Mike Bloom type. I'm posted my exit interview with Eric as we were speaking. Really cool guy to talk to, as we spoke about before. Did a lot of podcasting this week outside of the usual stuff. I talked about Glee and Riverdale, one show that I really love to hate and one show that I had never seen before. So that's it. Check out all the stuff that I do and more.
Riverdale's the one you've not seen before.
Yep, never. I took a page out of Josh's book that happened once upon a time where I got thrown into the lovely Kowski cast to watch an episode of Riverdale, a show I'd never seen before, and submitted myself to the malarkey, not to be confused with Brian.
Was it the
mesmerizing?
Was it the gargoyles and with their D&D one?
It was the introduction to that storyline. There was also a prison gang pickup football game where the cheerleaders lip sync / sang Jailhouse Rock. There's also a character named Dilton Doyle, which is the freaking stupidest name I've ever heard in my life. So if you want to check that out, go ahead. It was a lot of fun.
I think that's Archie Comics character, yeah. Dilton Doyle.
It's still a stupid name. I don't care if it comes from the Bible.
He probably eats supper. Wow.
Yeah. The supperhead, if I've ever seen one.
Dragging the Bible.
It probably gave you familiarity with that one character from
Haley. Help us out here before we drink for ourselves.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @hstrong_. You can check out my blog strongtakes.ca, where I'm talking about TV, food, and I posted what I was reading in April this month. And if you are just now catching up on Too Hot to Handle, I was on a couple podcasts last week. One of those was with Michael Bloom. If for some reason you've decided in your quarantine time you needed more torture and you're watching Listen to Your Heart, I am podcasting about that as well. Bachelor Presents Listen to Your Heart. So my friends, with that, I will invite you to pack your knives and get out of here. XOXO Gossip Haley. Bye.
Bye.